You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch. Welcome, everybody. As always, so great to have you here on LA Talk Radio, the nation's number one most listened to internet talk station. And I'm Dr. Michelle Cohen, your award-winning talk show host, where I try to help you with a lot of your issues and things and, you know, just try to work out stuff going on. I want to remind you that we don't have a therapeutic relationship per se, but I'm here to just to give you suggestions, whatever I can do to help. You know, a lot of folks ask questions. We all need some help sometime. So I'm here to, you know, just turn you on to a little bit of new knowledge that might make you feel better, even for a moment. And I always interview extremely interesting self-help experts, authors, doctors, all these people who know what they're talking about to help you out as well. And I do have a special guest coming on today. She's the author of a book called Writing to Wake the Soul. What is she talking about? Well, we're going to let you know in just a little bit. Let me also invite you to call in if you'd like. If you have any questions coming up for me or my guest, that number live here is 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. And also, if you are shy and you don't want to get your voice on the air, you can email me directly here, hooked up right to LA Talk Radio. It's Doc Michelle, D-O-C Michelle with two L's, at AOL.com. Doc Michelle. Okay, got it. Good. Now, like I said, I'm always suggesting ideas about how to help you with your problems and work through your feelings. You know, just how can I help you get through this tough time you're having or this tough time you're usually having or, you know, work through your feelings. Well, today I want to talk about how powerful writing down feelings and thoughts is. And I'm not talking about putting your stuff, gossip, feelings, judgments out there on social media websites. No. I'm talking about you writing down your feelings about whatever is going on just for you. Because, you know, sometimes no matter how badly you want to get something off your chest, just the thought of confessing a secret to even your closest friends can feel kind of painful. Or maybe you're afraid you're going to be judged or your friends will be upset, right? By putting kind of hard to talk about thoughts in your own journal or word processor, you kind of, it's just for you. You get the benefit of telling without the potential fallout from telling, you know, the wrong person. It's about you. It's privacy. It's all your little moment of your time with you. And, you know, it's old school behavioral, a little cognitive therapy. It's old school because if you write sort of a detailed account of experiences and insights into your daily life, you know, it kind of helps provide a history for you. You document something so you can look back and see where you've come from, right? It also allows for your personal review of your experiences and your challenges and how you reacted to them and responded to them. It gives you an outsider's perspective to yourself. And it kind of paints a clearer picture of who you are for you. See, I always emphasize the importance of, you know, going within yourself and stop babbling and blurting it out to everybody else. I mean, yes, it's important to talk about how you feel and, you know, we have friends and family members, loved ones, and we need to share just share our feelings. But when we're writing down things, and I'm not making fun of that, it's you got to do it. You've got to have catharsis through verbalizing your feelings. But I'm talking about writing something for you. It's your own little private time. And there's been so many experiments on how valuable it is to write down thoughts and feelings. One famous one is that one at Anderson Cancer Center. That's the one in Houston. And they found that there were over 20 cancer patients. They slept longer, more peaceful, had healthier brainwave activity after venting their feelings on paper. And this is compared to the, you know, other patients who just wrote about their diet and exercise. Today I ate 2 bananas and I walked a half mile. So to stop stress from stealing your Z's, researchers recommend setting aside like 20 minutes a day, maybe 15 minutes a day if you're not a big writer, 3 times a week to write. Find a place where you won't be distracted. Pour out your thoughts without stopping or worrying about spelling or grammar. Just lay it out there. It's not the punctuation, guys. It's the release of feelings that'll make you feel better, make you sleep better. Now, they also say, the pen is mightier than the sword. It kind of is sometimes, because there's another really big experiment, too. Dr. Matthew Lieberman, he's one of those guys that does all these studies about writing. He's over at UCLA, associate professor of psychology. And the way that went down is when people saw pictures of an angry or fearful face that he'd showed them, they had increased activity in a part of our brain. It's called the amygdala. Okay, that's old school brain. Serves as an alarm to activate just a bunch of biological symptoms, rather, to protect the body in times of danger. You know, fight or flight, baby. But the study showed, particularly this one that he did, that this part of the brain was not really that active when somebody wrote down and labeled the feeling that they were seeing. And what happened is they found that another part of the brain was more active in the prefrontal cortex. And that the region's kind of behind the forehead and the eyes. And this particular region has been associated with thinking in words about emotional experiences. And what it does is it inhibits behavior, stress, and it helps process emotions. So what happened is when these people wrote this stuff down, this part of the brain lit up that was like, woo, mellower, inhibiting behavior to act out or freak out or, you know what I'm saying? So the doc says here, and I'm talking about Matthew Lieberman, that when you put feelings into words, you're activating this prefrontal region, and you're seeing a reduced response in the amygdala. Speak English, Michelle. It's like the same way you hit the brake when you're driving when you see a yellow light, right? When you put feelings into words, you seem to be hitting the brakes on your emotional responses. And as a result of that, somebody may feel less angry or sad. It just helps us heal better, helps us feel better. And, you know, that's the way it works so many different times when we write down stuff. Write it down, process it. Now, the thing about what's going on in social media a lot of times is, you know, people are always putting down their feelings and judgments and, you know, we're Twittering about what the hell, whatever, which is fine. I'm not putting that down. It's amazing. It's lovely. It's great. We're all being able to communicate and understand what other people are going through. We can choose to pass if we're not in the mood to read someone's whatever. It's good. We check it out, see what people are doing. Connect with everybody. But this is different. This is like, you know, you're writing down. And you don't have to do old school writing with a pen and a paper, although there is something about that arm-hand-brain connection to write things down, you know, that makes you feel better. There is something about that. Because it has to do with control. I have more control. And isn't that like the big issue in most of our lives? Control? So when you have your hand and your thoughts and you're writing things down, don't worry about spelling or grammar or anything like that. Yes, you can word process. Of course you can do that. You know, if that helps you. A lot of people say, I don't like to write. I like to word process. That's cool. That's good. But it's kind of nice to be able to write something out. You know, they talk about streams of consciousness. We all have that. That's that little nonstop ongoing thought in our heads. Whatever it is. Oh, I'm feeling sad today because I didn't get to see my favorite person. And what am I having for lunch tonight? Possibly tomorrow I'll go to the fish restaurant. And then, oh, I do want to see that movie. And, oh, how dare she say that? Streams of consciousness that are going on a gazillion times. 2 million, perhaps, thoughts in a 24-hour period. Yes, we're thinking, not on a conscious level when we're sleeping. But we're processing when we're sleeping. We're working through. But anyway, so this really helps us, you know, get through things by writing down. And research has shown exactly what it does to help us and heal us. There is such a healing in writing. So I've decided to bring on a wonderful expert today. She is Karen Herring. She's a writer and ordained Unitarian Universalist minister. We'll find out a little bit more about that. And her work has appeared in so many periodicals and anthologies. She's led hundreds of writing sessions on numerous themes in community organizations and workplace settings. And she's a literary minister at St. Paul, Minnesota. And she's also an author, like I said. Her latest book actually is coming out November 5th. So this is perfect timing that you guys can pick it up. Next week you can get her book. And it's called Writing to Wake the Soul, Opening the Sacred Conversation Within. We're going to find out, you know, what does that mean? How can we wake our soul? Wake up! And why do we need to, you know, waken up our soul? And you're going to find out, surprisingly enough, it's not about, per se, religion. You know, it's about waking up that voice within you and finding out more. We're going to get our expert on the phone and see what she's doing today. Good afternoon. Hey, how are you, Karen? So nice to have you on the air with me.
So nice to be here.
Oh, thanks so much for calling in. You know what? I really enjoyed reading your book. It was really helpful for me and, you know, also for patients.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to hear that because, you know, I know that you're working with a lot of this same material, but in a very different way.
Yes. And I sure am. And this is what's really cool about your book is that we are going to talk about that different way to sort of help people, you know, segue into waking up their soul a little bit. And as you call it, opening the sacred conversation within, which I love that. I really do. So I'm going to invite callers, if that's okay, if they would like to ask you a question about anything in particular, about how they can help themselves. If that's
perfect.
All right. Good. So, folks, if you want to call in live, 323-203-0815, right here on the couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio and my special guest, Karen Herring. And if you have any questions about how can I help myself, whatever, you fill in the blank, by writing or following your book. And it is really a good workbook as well, so you can use it as that. So let's get into it. And the book is about language and why we turn to it and how we use it, especially, you know, when it comes to spirituality and religion or the way we find or make meaning in our lives. So we're going to get more into that spirituality. And what do you hope that readers will take away from it, Karen?
You know, on the most basic level, I would hope this would be a book that might give people tools and encouragement to slow down and listen to the voice of their own inner wisdom.
Hmm.
You know, to pay attention to their lives in a way that helps them maybe see new possibilities that have been folded into those old stories that maybe they've been wanting to change a bit. Because actually I think this is the work of religion, this kind of transformative possibility that we look for not only in our own personal lives, but in the world at large.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is a book that looks at writing and language in a way that reminds us there's always more there than meets the eye.
Yeah.
There are more possibilities. And when we write, we can engage in bringing those possibilities forward.
That is so cool. And I just want to share with listeners that you use in your book, and we'll talk more about this as well, different exercises you provide, and they're centered on like 10 key spiritual words. And we'll talk about those words briefly, but such as faith and prayer and love and grace and hope, all that cool stuff. And, you know, you can explore sort of a little more intimacy about who you are and your world. And, you know, I know you're encouraging people to do that, but you focus on the really great spiritual words, and what a great way to help people really define kind of who they are, and maybe, like you said, Karen, where they need to change their lives a little bit, huh? You think that would help?
We all have those places, don't we?
Yeah.
We would be a little different, you
yeah.
know? And,
yeah.
And so often this is probably why people turn to you for help. This is why some mm-hmm. people turn to religion, and why we turn to one another. But, you know, I think it's also why we turn to language, because language is actually born of our desire to share our experience with one another. It's
yeah.
meant to be connective. And yet, I think we're living in a time when language is often used for name-calling, for ways of drawing lines in the sand that
yeah.
separate you from me and us from them and try to accentuate the differences between us. But this is a book that calls us back to the origins of language and reminds us that language is meant to be connective.
Mm.
It's meant as a tool for me to share with you and you to share with me and each of us to share with your listeners
mm-hmm.
what our experience is like and what does it mean.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I wasn't like putting down social media at the beginning of the show, but just sort of, I think like what you're saying too is that I think a lot of, you know, we all need to have a voice and it's wonderful to be connected and, you know, as I said, share what we all think and feel and judge and, you know, on different levels about other people. What is your feeling about a lot of what's going on in maybe social media and how people are expressing themselves these days?
You know, I think the thing about social media is that it is a neutral tool. Mm. It can be used for good or for bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it has great potential for bringing people together and for helping us to find one another across great distance.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, it's great. But the thing about it that I think can be a little dangerous is that it's easy to engage it without remembering there is another human being on the other end, often a lot of human beings.
Mm.
And that each of those people is made of a story that causes them to see the world in a different way.
Mm.
And when we type away at our keyboards and post things in haste and in isolation, it's easy to forget that those words go out there and they have an impact on other people.
Mm. So true. You know, also we're coming from our own place and our own feelings and our own needs. Everyone, you know, it's communication is receiver-oriented, of course. So
yeah.
Everybody has their own interpretation of how they're reading something. And you could put something out there about someone or whatever with benign intentions, but somebody might take it as, you know, personal depending on how they're feeling that day or if they're sensitive or, you know, it, like you said, you know, it can be... there's another human being out there, and you have to be very careful about what you say and how you put it out there, you know?
Exactly, and just be open to how it's received. You know, I think one of the things that happens in social media is that sometimes we have these knee-jerk reactions.
Yeah.
Somebody tells us that something we wrote was hurtful, and we get defensive instead of saying, really? Tell me more about that. Can we be curious about how we might have hurt somebody and try to understand it instead of saying, oh, of course I didn't mean to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where is curiosity in all of this?
Yes. I hear you. you know, you talk about your book describing a particular approach to writing, and you call it contemplative correspondence. So can you share with listeners what that is and how it kind of works to open up within them what you call the sacred conversation within?
Sure, yeah. Contemplative correspondence is a name that I have used to describe this particular form of writing as a spiritual practice. And really, it's a spiritual practice that's rooted in theology and in story, and it's all drawn to the surface by these questions and writing prompts that I offer that are often just half-written sentences waiting for somebody else to complete them. And it's meant to be done in conversation with ourselves and also to encourage us to bring those things back into conversation with another. And so these two words that I've used to describe it, contemplative and correspondence, I use those for a variety of reasons. I call it contemplative because it really is a way of stepping back from our very active lives, from this habit of doing, 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 and just reflecting on what do our lives mean and what is all this activity about.
Yeah.
So that's the contemplative part of it. It's really pausing to look at and pay attention to our own lives. And then I call it correspondence because it's really like a form of correspondence. It's like writing a letter to and from yourself. A way, you know, to listen to whatever truth you have inside you waiting to be spoken.
Yeah.
And it's a way for you to speak back to that.
Yeah.
You know, some people will use this and they'll think of it as a form of prayer, of corresponding with God. And others will say, you know, it's just me listening to my own inner truth.
Yeah.
It works in both ways. But this word correspondence has a double meaning that I really like, which is that it also has to do with how one thing corresponds to another. And it encourages me as I write to think about what are the particulars of my life, and what do they mean to me, and how are they connected to everybody else and all the rest of life?
Wow.
So it's kind of like journaling, but then asking ourselves to, at a certain point, lift our eyes from the page and think about how what we've written is connected to the larger meaning in the world, as we find it, you know.
Yeah.
Not about a particular meaning.
Exactly.
But, you know, that many layered meaning that the world carries.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, it reminds me, Karen, of a lot of, you know, what we call insight-oriented therapy. It kind of helps people sort of unravel within themselves their own insights by thinking, focusing on certain themes and just going, why did I feel that way? And going back. But this sounds like it really helps, you know, as you say, opening the sacred conversation within. You're getting some insight when you focus on these 10 words and use these different exercises you suggest to really open up and find out more about you and things that may be a little deeper and hidden in there. So I think it's a great tool. By the way, in case you just tuned in to LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle, and I'm with author, and she's done so many things. She's a writer, ordained Unitarian Universalist Universalist minister, and I want to find out more about that. She has written so many periodicals and anthologies, led hundreds of writing sessions on different themes in public places, congregations, communities, and her latest book, Writing to Wake the Soul, Opening the Sacred Conversation Within, Karen Herring. As an ordained Unitarian Universalist minister, is that a particular religion per se, or how would you describe that?
Unitarian Universalism is a specific denomination, and we are non-creedal, though. So we grew out of Protestantism.
Okay.
And as Unitarian Universalism exists today, it's a religion, especially prominent in the United States, in Canada, but also in Europe. And we basically say that we, one of the phrases that's used is, we need not think alike to love alike.
Mm.
So we come together on Sundays saying, you know, the sacred is a very big thing.
Yes.
And we each have a different window into it. So
yes,
if we can covenant to come together in religious community,
mm-hmm,
without insisting that we all believe the same thing,
right,
we can actually end up understanding a whole lot more about the holy.
That's super. And the one thing in common that you all have is the belief in some kind of source or the higher power, or, you know, something that's beyond us all, and you come together to sort of focus on that as well, as I understand.
Well, and actually there are many Unitarian Universalists who use the label atheist for,
uh-huh,
their own worldview.
Okay.
And what we say is that this is really about paying attention to our own window on the world and how we find meaning and make it and what we do together to make this world a better place.
Mm. That's so lovely.
Yeah. It's a very broad net.
It sure
is. And it makes for a very interesting religious life.
I bet. I bet it really does. So just to help, you know, people understand a little bit more, what are the benefits of focusing, you know, our writing on, you, like you said, you have the 10 theological and spiritual themes?
You know, there are a lot of reasons to focus on that, but I think one of the most important ones is that it gives us a way to discipline our writing toward something larger.
Mm-hmm.
So when we focus the writing on these words, you know, faith, sin, prayer, it gives us a reminder to pay attention to these old wisdom teachings from around the world. I mean, people have been working with these concepts for millennia.
Yeah.
And so it reminds us that not everything has to be made up new on every day, and that we can benefit by looking at old teachings and understanding what other people in different cultures, different religions, different worldviews have seen in those ideas and themes. Then, you know, being in dialogue with that.
Yeah.
So it gets us out of ourselves in a way.
There you go.
You know, connects us to something else. I found research that I found fascinating is that, you know in your practice that writing can be a healing thing, as you mentioned in your opening introduction. But there's research that shows that it can be especially healing, and it is more likely to be healing if when we write about some of the difficult challenges and injuries in our own lives, if we do that in the context of larger meaning systems. So whether you call that God or religion or whether it's your own worldview and how you make sense of the world, when you write about your personal story and then make some connection to the way you understand life and the world and the sacred to be, your writing will become more healing.
Wow.
Isn't that fascinating?
That is so fascinating. I just love that idea. And it's about what is stirring in certain, like I said, you know, at the beginning of the show, certain brain functions, you know, what's going on. But it is cool. It is.
And the other reason that I use these words is that I think in today's culture of polarization and especially religious animosity, that many of us have started giving up religious language because of misunderstanding, because there's been this tug of war about who gets to say they are a person of faith, you know, things like that. And I really want us to all work at reclaiming the language and letting it be elastic enough that it can build a bridge instead of a wall between us.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a great idea. So let's briefly touch on, you know, the words that you suggest people write about in your book, Writing to Wake the Soul, Opening the Sacred Conversation Within, just to help them out to learn more about themselves and connect with other people. Can we just touch on those words, basically?
Sure. You want me to just run through the list for starters?
Why don't we do that? So the first word is faith. Of course, we're looking at faith. And go ahead, Karen.
and just run through, or do you want me to say something about each
one? Sure. If you want to just touch on what each one means, that would be great to you. I mean, we all sort of have an idea of what each one of these words means, but just sort of in your opinion, why it's important to talk about faith.
Yeah. Well, that's a way that I feel a little more comfortable saying it, because part of my point is that they have so many meanings.
Yep.
So I don't have one definitive meaning for any of these, but I'll tell you why I chose them for the book.
Great.
And so, you know, that first one, faith, is one that I think gets bandied about, like I said. You know, we argue about who gets to call themselves a person of faith. And actually, when you look at faith and you look at the history of the word and its application across history, it really comes down to, what do you trust?
Mm-hmm.
What do you trust so much that you are willing to place your heart and your life on it?
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, regardless of whether we have a religious affiliation or call ourselves atheists or whatever, mm-hmm. we each have faith in that sense, right?
Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's very personal. So that's a good idea.
Very personal. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also about belonging.
Yes.
Because when you talk about what you trust, that's where you go with a sense of deep belonging. And
yes.
So I think when we reclaim the word faith in that way, it also restores our sense of belonging. And, oh my, wouldn't it be a different world if we all had a sense of belonging?
Oh, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think I'd partially be out of business, wouldn't I?
I know. I was just thinking you probably see that so much. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's the word faith. The next one there is prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is a particularly important word in my own tradition, because not everybody in my tradition thinks about prayer as something that they do.
Right.
But actually, I think, you know, if we think of prayer as deep listening,
yeah,
it opens up a whole new way of regarding what happens in prayer and why it can make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, each of us knows that sense of listening to our own inner voice and also to the world.
Right, right.
And so, you know, that opens up new possibilities in how we think about prayer and when we use it. I mean, in my work as a chaplain, I've seen so many instances of people who say, oh no, you know, don't come in my hospital room. I don't have religion. I don't need you to pray.
Right.
And then when I say, how about if I just come in and listen to what this is like for you?
Yes.
Oh, that's a different thing.
Yes, exactly. No? Exactly. It is sort of, you know, you're putting a voice out there. It's not necessarily in your book that you're praying to someone or some higher power. It's letting that voice kind of put it out there, you know, possibly asking or asking questions or asking for help or, you know, praying for others or whatever it may be, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
And, you know, as Rumi says, there are a thousand ways to kneel and kiss the ground. And, you know,
that's for sure. That must be really hard for you, you know, to be a chaplain and work in hospitals with people who are ill. And that must be a very, you know, you're such a loving person. I can tell that by your writing and just by talking to you. But still, it takes a toll, you know, just being there and, you know, just being strong for other people. So
actually, you know, I think of chaplaincy a little bit differently than that. Mm. It is such a privilege to be a chaplain with people.
Oh.
It's really about sitting with people and offering compassionate listening.
Mm-hmm.
And it is really an honor to be with anybody in a sacred moment of whether it's fear or hope, just allowing the human connection.
Mm. What a lovely way to look at it. That's awesome, Karen. By the way, if you just tuned in here to LA Talk Radio, folks, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Karen Herring. She's the author of her latest book, which, by the way, is coming out next week, November 5th. It's called Writing to Wake the Soul, Opening the Sacred Conversation Within. For me, when I read it, it's really like a therapeutic book to really help you understand yourself better and that voice within and feel like you have a little more control over things and just take a look at your thoughts. And it's based on 10 different really important themes that maybe we all need to look at that are more sacred. So we talked about faith and prayer. And why do you think people should write about sin, Karen? That's interesting. I went, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. You know, some of the words that I chose for this book are words that are in there because they're all over the place in our vocabulary. And then some of them are there because I think they're words that we're shunning these days.
Mm-hmm.
And sin is one of those that I think a lot of us don't like to use the word sin because we relate to it as something that somebody else named for us.
Right.
And then we feel guilt for them naming it that way. And yet, if we give that word up,
mm-hmm.
don't have a really good, solid word for the essential breakage in relationship that mm-hmm. I think sin can, in its most general terms, come to describe.
Yeah.
And so I think wrestling with our own meaning for sin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that I say in the book, there's a theologian, Paul Tillich, who says, you know, we get into dangerous territory when we talk about sins with an S. We turn
yes.
it into a plural and suggest that maybe we could name them all.
Yeah.
And
interesting.
Get really specific about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
if we think about it, I'm suggesting that we think about this word with a capital S and no plural
yeah.
and just say, yeah. what is it that causes breakage in our world.
Mm. Yeah.
And if we do that, it gives us a way of really wrestling with our own complicity,
right.
broken relationships, and also with naming some of the larger things, you
mm-hmm.
know, like racism
yeah.
or, you know, sexism or
yes.
all these different things that break our basic harmonic relationship with one another.
Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense. It really does. It's very thought-provoking, you know, and enlightening for the self to write about sin, that concept. And, of course, one of my favorites, love. You suggest folks write about love. And we kind of know how that would inspire people and make them feel better. But also, what was your reasoning for this?
My reasoning for that word was partially that we have so much hitched it to romance.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to encourage people to look at its deeper meaning
mm-hmm.
and to really think about it in terms of not just an emotion,
mm-hmm.
but an ethic,
yeah.
something that calls us to live our lives in a certain way, not only giving love, but opening ourselves to receive it. Because I think actually one of our biggest challenges is letting ourselves be vulnerable
mm-hmm.
enough to receive love.
Right. That's exactly right. And when you were, you know, talking about working in the hospitals with critically ill people and that you as a chaplain, you know, being there for people, you honor those sacred moments to be able to share that with someone. That's love, Karen. That's you're loving, girl. That's what you're doing right there. Ah, and you also encourage people to write about justice. Why justice? What's that about?
You know, justice is another one of those words that actually we do use a lot
mm-hmm.
now. And I think sometimes we think about it in terms of the scales and writing something, giving it this sort of static
mm-hmm.
sense of balance. But I put justice in here to really challenge us to think about how does justice move in the world?
Yeah.
And what does it mean as things change? Because, you know, the world is changing faster than ever.
Oh, yeah.
And so justice is not just a sense of applying laws. It is that.
Mm-hmm.
Nor balancing right and wrong. It is that. But even more than that, I think it grows out of relationship. It takes us right back to the concept of love,
yes.
you know?
Yeah.
Cornel West said justice is just what love looks like in public.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we put those two together, I think we get a really different and a much more vital sense of justice.
Mm.
And also, I would say, a more demanding one.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. It really does. You know, the next word you share and ask people to write about is hope. And, you know, it's interesting because I tell people a lot when they're into the, you know, the thought vibration, as I call it, of hope, of hope, hopefulness, hope, that's a different level. That's a good level of thinking. Because when you're into the hope, for me, and I try to explain to them, when you are hopeful, that's a positive thing. And then from there, you can go to even higher levels of, you know, feeling like knowingness and allowing. But you talk about hope, and for me, that is such a great place to be, because it gives faith as well. But so why should folks write about that in your book?
Well, it's interesting listening to how you work with hope and mm-hmm. describe it to people, because that to me goes right back to the origin of the word hope, mm-hmm. which is basically it means to want something to happen and to have a feeling of expectation and desire. So there's, it's fertile. Hope is so full of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's. I also think it's interesting that in other languages, like in Spanish, the mm-hmm. same word for hope is the word for waiting.
Hmm.
So, you know, we think of waiting as a bad thing sometimes, mm-hmm. but actually maybe it's a way of tuning in to what is yet to come.
Yes.
And so hope is, you know, it's something that I think a lot of people are wrestling with right now, because mm-hmm. there's so much reason for despair. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether you're looking at our national political situation or the environment or, you know, all of the conflict in the world or the horrific poverty.
Yes.
There's so much room for despair, and mm-hmm. you know, hope is really about paying attention to what might come and letting ourselves lean toward that in a way that brings it to be.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Exactly. Well said. And I, you know, you say there's so much going on, just to be relevant as to what's going on today. I know you've probably heard this on the news. You're in a East time zone. But I mean, you heard here in Los Angeles, a huge part of our freeway and our airport is shut down because of another shooter. Someone went bonkers in the Los Angeles International Airport this morning and shot a couple of people, and they don't really want to release details right now, but the whole airport and there's gridlock all over on the freeways, on the surface streets in Los Angeles here right now, and it does give us a feeling of, oh my God, you know, where do we find the hope? What can we do? There's loose cannons everywhere. There's always crazy people out there who have an agenda or a terrorist or something like that, you know, and so that is so relevant, you know, hope. I'm going to write about hope and the positive things that I see and the positive things that I'm going to allow come, as you said.
Yeah, you know. One of the writing exercises in the book around hope is noting that sometimes when we are surrounded by a world or our own personal life in a way that's full of despair, we actually have to borrow hope.
Mm. Yeah.
And to look for symbols and stories and images that lend us some hope when we don't find it close at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And when I've found that when people actually do this kind of writing, it trains their eye so that the next time, even if they're not sitting down with pen in hand to write, and they're looking around the world, they remember, oh yeah, I remember that exercise when I was looking through magazines at different images and mm-hmm. I just randomly picked a photograph.
Hmm.
And then I looked in that photograph for anything that I could call a sign of hope.
Mm. Wow.
People have told me they carry that practice forward.
Yeah. Yes.
And say, oh yeah, that's right. Everything looks hopeless here. Where in this room can I see one little sign of hope to fix my eyes on?
Yes. And that's wonderful. That's really helpful to people, you know, as well. We have an email that just popped up from a listener, but I want to, maybe we could just briefly touch on the next four redemption, grace, hospitality and reverence, you know, for the listeners. Because I like, she seems to need help from you. So we can briefly just hang on the line here on the on that particular email there, girl, and I'll get right to you. But I'd like to just, you know, touch on some of the other, the four other concepts that you want people to write on. So let's do that.
Sure. Okay. So the next word is redemption. And I put this in the book because I'm just personally fascinated with the way that we use this word less and less in terms of religion these days, and mm-hmm. often in terms of cultural reviews.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when was the last time you read a book review or a movie review that said, this is a redemptive story?
Mm, yes.
And
yes.
So I can see that we really are looking for redemption, but somehow we've become really reluctant to get it from religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so that tells me there's rich ground here for
yeah.
us to understand what does redemption mean to us in the 21st century,
right.
you know?
Right. It makes
and
a lot
what,
of sense.
What are some of its thorny sides, and what are some of its sides that actually we long for in all of these redemptive stories?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, that makes sense.
So,
yeah.
Yeah,
So we write...
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so that is, redemption is really important for us to focus on that as well and learn from stories on that. You also suggest we write about themes involving grace. That is really great. Giving
you
and
know,
receiving. And,
mm-hmm. Grace is one of those things that almost everybody says, oh, yeah, I could use a little more grace in my life.
Mm, yeah.
But when you ask people what grace is, it's really hard to define.
Yeah.
And yet, grace is really like a form of blessing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It refers to those things in our lives that kind of wash over us with a sense of extraordinary generosity and well-being, maybe beauty and belonging.
Yeah.
And so it writing about grace is a way of understanding, how do I name and be able to find
yeah.
the places where grace is active in my life?
Yes, exactly. That's wonderful. Also, you talk about hospitality, and that's a really interesting word, and I know you had a take on why you put hospitality in there.
Yeah, I put that in there. A lot of people don't think of that as a religious word, but when I think of the role of religion historically and around the world,
mm-hmm.
it is really, I think you can often boil it down to the way that we human beings negotiate the relationship between self, God, and other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, so much of our dialogue these days is about drawing a line between self and other.
Yeah.
And taking those things that we don't want to deal with and pushing them on the other.
Yeah.
And,
exactly.
That I think hospitality is a really, really important virtue.
Sure.
And value for
us. It really is. It really is.
In the 21st century.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So we,
that's why that one's in there.
Yeah, that's a great, it's really wonderful. And by the way, folks, I'm going to ask Karen in just a minute how you can get a hold of her book. We are running close to a hard break here with CBS News, but I just wanted to mention that you also talk finally about how people can write about reverence in their lives. So what is the purpose of that, Karen?
Yeah, reverence. I decided to end the book with reverence because... you know, I think reverence is often related to how we name the holy, the sacred, God. There are so many names. And again, often we take our favorite name and we try to wrestle it away from anybody else who wants to use that name differently,
mm-hmm.
or we say their name isn't the right name. And true reverence goes way beyond all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds us that
yeah.
every name for God and for the holy is only a name.
Yes.
And it's like that old Buddhist saying that you should never confuse the finger pointing to the moon with the moon itself.
Mm. Wow.
And so I ended the book with reverence because I wanted it to kind of point us as writers and readers off the page.
Yeah.
And to say that every word that's written in every book, whether it's, you know, our own words that we've written or somebody else's,
yeah,
they're all just pointers.
Right, exactly.
They're all just directing our attention
right.
towards something bigger, more mysterious, more wonderful, beautiful,
mm-hmm.
and more full of possibility.
Oh, that's great.
It has to be.
Makes sense. Karen, how can people get in touch with you? What's your website?
My website is www.karenherring.com. It's KarenHerring.com.
Great. And you can pick up the book. It's available on November 5th. And it's called Writing to Wake the Soul, Opening the Sacred Conversation Within. Thank you so much for being there here with us and helping folks. And I'm going to tell the listener how she can get in touch with you as well. So,
all right.
Thanks so much for this great book and for being there for everybody. I really appreciate
it. Thank you, Michelle. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
You too. Have a blessed day.
Okay.
All too. Right. All right, Karen. Thanks. All right. Again, it's Writing to Wake the Soul. And, you know, we all need to wake our souls up a little bit. Wake up! The shows will all be available for you to download and replay, of course, if you would like, tomorrow with all the content. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Michelle. I'm out of here. Great show coming up next. And as I always say, do take care of yourself first. Then you'll be great for others. And that's the way it works. Be back next week with more help for you. Bye-bye.